This is a replay of Thursday night, June 29th's WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. All you got to do is call 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, I'm not sure it's good that I had a full meal before this discussion or bad. It's hard to say. But actually, it was last November we were seeing that the USDA was approving lab-grown chicken. But it turns out, was November, it turns out now that the approval to sell it to you in the grocery shelves is final, and two companies got the green light to go ahead a week ago. And I've been reading about it ever since then, and what I wonder, if you knew it, would you eat it? All right, now it's interesting they chose chicken because, of course, everything tastes like chicken, no matter what it is. You hear about, he's a cannibal. It tasted like chicken. Well, it's rattlesnakes. It tasted like chicken. On and on it goes. Well, apparently now it's a lab test tube. It tastes like chicken. Well, in fact, the two companies would argue that, of course, is because it is chicken, and at one point, well, it could have been. Cultivated Meat Producers, and the two companies are Upside Foods and Good Meat, got the USDA approval to begin commercially selling this stuff. And the day has finally arrived, they're saying. Oh, more good news. It may be a little while. They're going to start with selling it in restaurants. Oh, yum. And I'm not 100% sure how it's going to appear on the menu, but I don't think it's going to appear as grown in a test tube. They'll have other words for it, no doubt. And so now it is that they have shown. In fact, there was a demonstration that Good Meat in their Eat Just office in Alameda, California, the San Francisco Bay Area, is showing off their chicken now that they've got a no questions response from the FDA. Lab grown chicken. Yeah. How exactly does that work? Well, it's created using cells from living animals, like a fertilized egg, and then it's incubated and grown into large masses of meat. Oh, man. The product is then cut and restructured into facsimiles of regular butchered meat products. So you're not going to go to the store and see something that's got two wings and two legs and looks like all it's missing is a head. This apparently is going to be chicken parts. Which, of course, vindicates the entire aerospace industry, because for years, back when I used to fly commercially, long a concept I abandoned, but you'd get the meal served you, back when they served you meals, no matter what class of service you were in, they served your meal, that could only be described in most cases as baked chicken ass. I know that's not a popular way to put it, but literally, there were things at 40,000 feet that you were almost positive you'd never seen on the ground. And I still don't know how they did it. I don't want to know how they did it, but I have a feeling they're going to do it again, this time at sea level. Now, neither of these companies is ready to distribute to retail locations just yet. Thank God. And actually, while Good Meat is planning to roll it out in restaurants soon, it'll be a little while longer for Indeed. But either way, it's coming. So what I want to know is, will you eat it? And if yes, yes. If no, no. Because this begs a larger question. I should back up and say many, many years ago, decades ago, my adopted mom was talking to me, and she was bored, and she said, you know, I wish they'd invent a new animal for me to eat. And I laughed at that, and I said, Mom, there's tons of animals for you to eat, but you will not eat most of them, which is true for all of us. And it's interesting, of course, thank God we cringe at the thought of eating dog, though they don't in China, I'm sorry to say, in many locations. And I can understand that, by the way, with dogs, our pets and things like that. You know, you probably don't want to eat your livestock if you've named it either, though there are some 4-H'ers who might disagree. But in general, we have a very limited amount of animals that we're willing to process and eat. And the thought of eating animals other than what gets the okay, pigs and steer, tends to turn our collective stomachs. Yeah. Horse meat, for instance, although many places have been charged with putting it into hamburgers, but I won't go there. But in general, there's more that we are unwilling to eat than we are willing to eat. So, and I'm not sure why that is, actually, because I would think by and large that it's all the same in terms of whatever they're slaughtering. These companies, by the way, are priding themselves on they don't slaughter anything, well, except your appetite. So I'm curious if you'd eat it. Yeah. And of course, it tastes like chicken. Well, now they're claiming it is chicken. All right, 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, kicking it off tonight is Steve in Iowa. All right, not at Iowa 80, though, just on the highway, not at the truck stop. So, Steve, what's happening tonight?
Mom, how you doing?
All right.
No, I would not eat that.
I won't either. I will not. I don't
no.
care. I just don't care.
Not knowingly.
Yeah, there's the operative word, not knowingly. But yes, I will not choose to eat this. And, you know, I guess they've been preparing us for a while because, you know, tofu turns into everything. And, you know, I don't eat those plant-based burgers either. If I'm having a hamburger, I want it to have said moo at some point in its life.
Yes, I agree. No, I have not had any of the plant-based off myself.
Yeah, not
doing
that.
I don't want to. I'm not interested.
Me neither. I'm with you. So.
And I will be across the street from the Iowa 80 in about 2 hours.
Oh,
hour
okay.
And a half.
All right. Well, it'll be well lit. We know that.
Ah, yes. Every night.
Yeah.
Anyway, last night you were talking a little bit about tankless water heaters.
Yes.
And we have been using tankless for about 18 years.
Uh-huh.
And they're wonderful.
Yeah, I love them. I absolutely adore them. I, you know, in property that I have, that's one of the first things I do, put in my tankless. Of course, if you're renting,
yes.
You really frown on it, you know.
Yes. We're on our second unit only because the first, I'm not going to say it was improperly installed, but mm-hmm. It wasn't exactly, it could have been upgraded, I guess, and then the maintenance was, it was never maintained.
Right.
And it failed. It, like, catastrophically failed.
Yes.
And by the time it came to put in the new one, I knew a whole lot more about them, and I went to a different company. And the original one we had, both units were Renai. The original one was like a 7.2 gallon per minute.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And now we have like a 9.9.
Uh-huh.
But I live in Iowa, so I will never get 9 gallons out of it.
Right.
Because of the rise.
Sure.
And... So the company, they balked. They said, we only do the 7, you know, whatever it was I had. And I said, no, you're putting in a 9.
Right.
And then about a year later, I was talking to one of the foot soldiers, you know, the guys, because they do my HVAC too.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to one of the foot soldiers, and he says, all we do now is the 9s.
Yeah.
You know? And I said, yeah, because, you know, you kind of have to. So you must have, a car wash one?
Yeah, it's practically that. And, you know, next time I'm in Globe, I'll have to look to see what it is. My other one was a Renai. I blew it out, and again, it was my fault, just like yours. And one of the problems nobody had told me is with our rotten water, you really want to put a good filter in front of that puppy. And I
yes,
didn't.
Yes, we have... Yep.
Yeah. In fact, they're replacing my filter now, because when I first agreed to the filter, I said, all I care about is it filter out fluoride. It's the only thing I really care about. Well, of course, this one doesn't. So they had to search high and low, and they finally called me. We found one that absolutely filters out fluoride. Bring that puppy on down. So,
there you go. Now, is yours a condensing, do you know?
I think so.
Because I went round and round with my company. One of the things that ruined my original one was condensate, and I did not know what condensate was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And condensate is basically, it's acidic.
Right.
And they tried to argue with me, oh, it's the same acidity as Coke or orange juice. And I said, yeah. But it's a different acidity, where I guess you can take like a 5-gallon bucket of condensate, put it in a room, and as it evaporates it, well, the condensate will attack the metal.
Right.
And that's what happened to my first, that was one of the two things that happened to my first unit. So I made them put in condensate neutralizer.
Right. That's what I was going to say was the key. The neutralization is important.
Yep. I have two. I have one on my furnace, and again, the foot soldiers, that when they come out, they're like, and this is a big company, they're like, you're the only one that has these.
Well.
And I said, yeah, I know. I said, I've gone round and round with the owner or owners. Like, you guys need to do this, you know, because under my floor in the basement, we have part PVC, part cast iron, and I had to tear up the kitchen line. I had to tear up the floor to replace the kitchen line because it collapsed. It was cast iron.
Yeah.
So I added a floor drain to dump the condensate into, and because originally it used to go into the sump pump. But I explained to them, if you were to pipe that into my floor drain, which you couldn't do it before, but I added a floor drain to do it too, and it ruined the cast iron, do you think I'm going to come after you once I realize what caused it? And God forbid it doesn't go all the way out to the street through the front yard, and I got to dig up the front yard. That's why I went round and round with them. You should put these in for your own interest.
No, absolutely, they should. And of course, what we're dealing with is the pH level, and at the sweet point, it forms carbonic acid. And not only will it corrode metal, but ultimately, whether it's concrete or plastic, leave that there long enough, it's going to be a problem on anything.
Yep. So I actually have one of my neutralizers would probably do my furnace and my tankless both.
Yeah.
But I have one for each to be on the safe side.
Uh-huh.
And now as far as the water temperature goes, we have three controllers, thermostats, if you will, throughout the house where you can change the water temperature at will.
Right.
And so we run ours like if I take a shower, I just set it for 110. I don't have to mix in any cold water.
Yeah, not at that.
Cleaning, no. And if we're cleaning, maybe might run it 140 if we're cleaning, or my wife will run it when she's doing some laundry up that high. And then like 7 years ago, I put in a recirc pump because, as you know, they're not instant, they're continuous.
Right, and there is a difference. It's got to get to you. That's right. I wish they were instant, but that's not the way this works.
No, and so that's why I put in the recirc pump because it took me a long time to figure out where to put it.
Right.
Because the unit's in the basement, and we have a half bath on the first floor. Now, before the recirc pump, it took anywhere from 45 seconds to a minute to put water to that sink. And I didn't really understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally figured it out. It's not measuring the distance with a tape measure. You got to add in all the fittings and elbows, and that's how you determine the pipe length. But that faucet, it's only pulling like a half a gallon a minute.
Right.
And so, like, the second floor shower, you'd get hot water in, say, I don't know, 30 seconds. You'd get it much quicker. And so once I finally understood why, I put the recirc pump in. And now I have hot water at that sink in 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, it doesn't, I'd like to put a second one in on the second floor to get hot water up there a little bit quicker, but there's, it's a on-demand recirc pump where the only time it runs, I have 5 switches in the house. You have to push the switch like a doorbell to activate the pump. It's not a timer. The newer, I haven't kept up with them, but the newer Renais, mine are hardwired. They were supposed to come out with an app and a box that mounted to the bottom of the unit where you could do it through an app on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have a wired unit. I don't know if it would work with mine. I have a pretty cool one. But they have one where it's got the timer built into the controller.
Right.
But you would set, like, I want hot water, you know, I want the hot water to run at like 5 a.m. or mm-hmm. whatever. And I don't know if it works on demand or not. But one of our controllers, because you can only have three. If I could have more, I'd have one in the laundry room. But
right.
They only let you have three. But one of them, you can set not just the temperature, but you can set the gallons. Like,
right.
Say you want to fill a hot tub.
Right.
You set for the temperature, and then you plug in, I don't have a hot tub, so I'm going to make up a number, 80 gallons. You turn on the water, and after 80 gallons, the unit shuts off. It just shuts off.
Right, absolutely.
And 18 years, and I love them, but they're just so different than a tank.
Yeah, I would never have a tank again. And, our pumps are Grundfos, and, I can see positives and negatives on both of that, you know, for recirculating and for just pressure boosting. But
you have a Grundfos pump on yours?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, yeah. That's what I have.
Exactly. Lately, with a replacement on some of this, they've been using more plastic parts, which I'm not as happy about. But even so, for the most part, you know, as long as I make sure that filter is operating, I don't have much of a problem. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm with you. So you betcha.
They make units that will go to 180 degrees.
Yes, I know.
I don't know what they cost, but I'm sure they cost substantially more.
Yeah, but still.
And the old venting, like my original unit, I think it was called Ubink, UBBINK venting, and the venting was ungodly expensive.
Yep.
Now they've changed it, and you can just use regular old PVC to vent it. And So 18 years, and I'm with you. I don't ever want to go back to a tank unit.
No. The place that I've had to rent for while we're doing John's therapy and all that is, of course, the first thing I said is, do you mind if I put a tankless water heater in? They looked at me like I lost my mind. And they said, I'll pay for it. No, you can't. And so I'm
serious.
Yeah, I know. And I was,
you want to rent my house?
Right. Exactly. And I've decorated America over the years, but in any event, and I said, you know, totally be about my expense. No, you can't do that. So now John and I take showers in shifts, you know, cause that's just the way it is. So, yeah.
And as you know, one of the best ways, the most efficient way to use it is if you like laundry, take a shower and do the dishes all at once.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, well, I do that in Globe. I don't do that here. Yeah, exactly.
No. I'm actually kind of glad that I was not happy, needless to say, at the time when the first one failed. I want to say it was like 7 or 8 years old. But again, it was kind of improper installation mixed with definitely a lack of improper and lack of maintenance. And I let the new company handle the maintenance. It's like $70, I think, a year.
Exactly.
They come out and they flush it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what, you guys know what you're doing, and I'll just let you take care of it. But
good deal.
Yeah, you got to reconfigure the plumbing. We had to put in a 1-inch dedicated gas line. Well, we didn't have to, but they recommended
it,
and I'm glad I did.
Absolutely. I did the same thing. I changed the gas lines. It is always good to talk to you, Steve. Thank you for taking me along for the ride. I will enjoy I-80 tonight. All right, thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Welcome. Bye-bye. So we'll pick it up there. We got Leah and Marcus Hook, in what's left of Philadelphia with the weather. And there's room for you, too. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
It's so good to see you. It's been some time since we've seen each other. Seems like only yesterday. We were so in love with each other. Why did we walk away? I can see all the love you feel inside, but we both belong to another. We're holding on to this memory that we can, that we can't rediscover. And it's a strange love affair when I'm making love to her and I'm looking at you, girl, just lying there. And I know you feel the same way too. Oh, what more can I do? You see, I'm caught up in a strange love affair.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Lanier and Company. Yeah, Strange Love Affair. And not only is it from the Dancing in the Night CD from 1987 that the group put out, but neatly enough, it's on a five CD kind of box set of, I'm trying to think of what the name of it was, but it was great, like music to dance to. And eventually I'll think of what it was, but be that or not, the reality, I think Dancing in the, well, anyway, I'll tell you who can tell me is Marlo, probably. Marlo from Jackson, welcome back to WGN Radio. I'm sure you know about that box set I'm talking about.
Well, thank you so much. I called you, see, my sister was talking today. Raleigh, get my book. Did she get my book? She going to throw it away. I said, Raleigh ain't going to throw nothing away.
Oh, no, this is great. And what a nice inscription. We're talking about Mona Lisa, and they had a real nice piece about her dance school. And my favorite part was the last sentence of that when she said, "My dream is a dream that came true." And, you know, right there, that's the definition of success. And she not only choreographed your stuff, but she's taught an awful lot of girls in Jackson, and probably guys too, but how to dance.
Yeah, sure have. She's been doing it for like 40 years.
Yeah, and she was teaching third grade when they asked her. And you know what I thought was interesting? Because she taught in the schools for so long, things like music and dance that used to be so important, and now it's rarely the part of a curriculum anywhere. So it's great that she has a school of dance that people can go, and that's wonderful she's still doing it.
Mm-hmm, sure is. That was at the Carl Perkins Civic Center.
Yeah.
And it was about 2,500 folks. It was packed. You know, she do it once a year.
Yes, and
so
that's...
when she retired, she kept it going.
Yeah, that's Living It Up, and Thursday, April 6th. And I've got the CD right here on my desk. Gil Scott-Heron, in fact, I'm going to play something from him next because I just loved him, and he was a Jacksonian. But interestingly, I can't watch the CD till we're back in Globe because I don't have any way to see it, but I've got it.
Well, it's just a souvenir for you. Anyway.
Oh, no, I want to see it. I want to see every minute, just like I read the entire R. Jackson Home magazine, Volume 9, Issue 1, Spring 2023. But I loved Mona Lisa Lanier, Loving Where You Live Through Dance. And it was a really nice article. And again, a very nice inscription. So please tell her thank you, thank you, thank you.
I sure will. Did you see the pictures of me in there, too?
Yes.
The girls, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yes.
There was a good photographer there that night. He did a good job. I have never seen the video yet. I didn't send it to you.
Oh, so you haven't seen it either. Well, then I'll be the one to watch it and tell you about it.
Well, do that. Yeah, I'm still trying to keep a little things going. And, you know, the Lanier Company, I'm just trying to keep it going for as I can go with it.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was disappointed. They didn't call you Marlo. They called you Marlon. I'm like, why didn't they get that right?
My real name is Marlon.
Oh, really?
But see, we was in Hawaii, and people used to ask me, you know, what's your name? So they kept saying Marlo, so... Back in the day, I just stuck with it, so I go under that name. It's my real name.
Okay. So it is.
It's with Marlo.
It's Marlone is your birth certificate name? Wow.
No, Marlon.
Oh, I think they put an E on it in the article.
I did. Yeah. Marlon, like Marlon Brando.
Right,
Marlon
no, that.
Jackson.
Right, they have M-A-R-L-O-N-E.
You know what? On the album, they got M-A-R-I-O-N. On Lanier and Company album, we did it.
Oh, so you're Marion. Oh, well, there you go.
Missed my name up all the time.
Ah, jeez. All right.
It's Marion, so I'm going to stick with Marlon, so they can remember that pretty good, instead of putting that I.
Yeah.
Where the L's supposed to be.
So Mona Lisa choreographed your act on Dick Clark's American Bandstand. Now, I'd right. love to see mm-hmm. I'd love to see a clip of that.
Okay. Yeah, it's on there. It's on YouTube.
Is it?
Lanier and Company. Yeah, I saw it today. Yeah,
okay.
When we perform, it's on there.
So they
got the interview and the performance.
Really? I'm going to look for that after the show. That's good. I'm so glad it's on there.
Now, on there, my brother used to do the lead singing,
sure.
Farris.
Sure. Farris Jr.
Well, he passed away in 2019.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about that.
So me and him sang alike. If you hear me singing on my song, you might think it's him, but that's me. We sound exactly alike.
Good, good. Well, then you get to keep the tradition up.
Right, and people used to say, you sound like your brother. So I started, I had a good soprano voice when I sang real high.
Yeah.
So after he passed away, I said, well, I guess I'm going to use my natural voice since he doesn't sound so good, which he's a better singer than I, but I can hang just a little bit, I believe.
Yeah. I found the 5-CD set that record's on, and it's Love on the Dance Floor. And it's on the Connoisseur label in the UK, and it came out in 1989. And there's 5 volumes of it, and sure as life, on volume 3, there it is. So that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you know, I can go back on what we did, you know, keep everything going. When the time right, it'll gel, hopefully.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
To work itself out.
Yeah. You betcha.
I got to get me some good publishers and all this kind of stuff. I'm just behind, girl. I tell you, this new stuff that, you know.
Yeah, I don't even understand it.
I have no idea
how they do records anymore. It makes no sense to me.
I know it. It doesn't change. I laid off so long to help take care of my brother with my mother and me and my sister. So when I come back, all this stuff, I went in the studio. They don't use master. They use Pro Tools, all this stuff.
Right.
All this stuff has changed.
Right, it has, yeah.
And I had to get some of the masters changed over to that chip.
Right.
You know, I didn't know that. So, you know, stuff just done changed.
It has. But, you know, great music hasn't. It doesn't matter if it was on a piece of tape or on a chip. If it's a great sound, it's a great sound.
Yeah, and I love that music you be playing. Ooh, that like Scotty said, keep doo-wop going. I mean, it really run your mind back. It's good music, real good music.
Yeah.
Yeah, got a lot of meaning to it. That was so good about it.
Oh, of course. Well, it is always wonderful to hear from you. And like I say, I've got this right on my desk. So, yes, tell Mona Lisa thanks.
Okay, I do it. And thank you and John for what y'all do, and Adam and all y'all. I appreciate you all.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, Marlo.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
So, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, Leah is in Marcus Hook. So, have you had to buy an ARC?
No, no. We got the water heater installed, and it's fine.
Okay, good. So hot water's coming out of it?
Yes.
All right. Hey, you can shower.
Yes, definitely. No, I would not eat that chicken because it reminds me. Now, I know you don't watch movies, but it sounds like Soylent Green to me.
Oh, God, I know the theme of Soylent Green. Yeah. Next thing you know, it'll be people. But
it's people.
Yeah. No, I remember that was like 73. I remember when that came out, and I thought, I don't think so. I'm not going to go see that. It's the stuff of which nightmares are made.
Because that's what it reminds me of. And I don't want it. I don't want it.
Well, no, I don't either. But I do think it's interesting how we find certain animals acceptable and other animals turn our stomach. And that's got to be conditioning.
I think it's fascinating, too.
Yeah.
My mom's dog, as a matter of fact, she had a chocolate lab.
Oh.
And he would not eat. He was the gentlest soul. He would not eat lamb. And he always got this weird look on his face whenever he smelled lamb cooking. And my mom thought it was because lamb is maybe too close to dog or something.
Interesting.
That he always got a funny look on his face when she cooked lamb. He would not eat it.
Well, what I understand about dogs and lamb, this is a very weird piece of information, is that they associate the smell of lamb with pain.
They do?
Yeah, and I don't remember why I know that, but it's not unusual. And apparently, it's not unusual for dogs to refuse to eat lamb, and it has to do with them smelling it. And, you know, they associate it with pain. And
you're kidding.
No, no. So I think that
why? Do you know why?
No, but I think you can probably find out. I'll bet you it's online. Because,
well, I'll look it up on my phone and see if I can find anything. God,
yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know what the deal is.
Not like you can ask them, you know?
Well, that's right. Well, you can. They're just not going to answer. But and they are genetically programmed to eat meat, so it's not all meat, it's
right.
Lamb. Yeah.
Right.
And
you
know,
nerd.
But you know why? I don't know.
Because he would get this crazed look in his eyes, like his eyes would roll back in his head almost.
Wow, wow!
Like weird. It was weird.
All right, I'm looking this up. All right, here's an article that says some dogs are afraid of lamb meat because they were selectively bred not to harm sheep.
Because he's a Labrador Retriever.
Well.
And they're like work dogs, and they're used as sheep herders sometimes.
Yeah,
I think, aren't they?
Well, I don't know. I know nothing about the history of the lab, but certainly, some dogs are bred that way. But it doesn't surprise me. Is that I know, like Shetland sheepdogs and all that. Clearly, they're you know, rounding them up, and yeah, like here's an article that said. My sweetie was fine in the kitchen until my daughter made some lamb chops for her boyfriend. Sweetie rose up off the kitchen floor and backed out of the kitchen, eyes wide like she'd seen some scary thing we don't see. But her attention was on the pan on the stove. And it only happened when lamb chops were cooked. And so she chalked it up to Sweetie being a purebred with generations going back that they herded, not eat, sheep. So who knows?
Yeah.
You
there
know.
You go. Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah. Fascinating. And so the other thing that a lot of these articles are saying is that there can be, again, with the sense of smell, the dog can confuse it with other negative things that they associate with that sense. So it may have
right.
It may have nothing to do with the sheep at all. But I think the best answer, ding, 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 we have a winner, is how many were bred for herding and guarding livestock instead of eating it.
Right. Right. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because
that's not why I called.
Right. Well, of course not. But it's interesting. Some people are saying, well, lamb is very fatty. No, I guarantee you the dog doesn't care if it's fatty.
Yeah. The dog does not care.
Right. Right. That is a given. But the herding instinct, I think we're up to something now. Hang on a minute, Leah. We'll continue this in moments right here on WGN Radio.
Uno, dos. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. See that black boy over there running scared, his old man in a bottle. He done quit his 9-to-5, he drink full time, and now he's living in a bottle. See that black boy over there running scared, his old man got a problem, and it's a bad one. He ain't done pawned off damn near everything. His old woman away. And don't you think it's a crime when time after time after time people in a bottle, there's people living in a bottle. Listen to me, see that sister, a show was fine, but she started drinking wine in a bottle. She told me, oh man, committed a crime, he's doing time.
seen her out there on the avenue all by herself. Sure need help from the bottle. I seen her, preacher man tried to help her. Oh, she cussed him out and hit him in the head with the bottle.
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. It's Gil Scott Heron, The Bottle, 1974. One of my faves. He's actually born in Chicago, but raised for the first 12 years of his life in Jackson, sent to live with his maternal grandmother there in Jackson. And yeah, a fine representation. And of course, probably best known in terms of titles for his poem, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And good as well. So lots of good stuff. And I think Jackson imprinted nicely on him before he moved to New York. And yeah, sadly, as life went on, in 2001, he was sentenced to 1 to 3 in New York State for possession of cocaine. And he was out by 2002 and released on parole for good 2003. But next thing you know, violated the plea deal on drug possession charges. In 2006, he left a rehab center. And he was sadly HIV positive, and he said he left because the clinic refused to supply him with medication. And the interesting thing about that was that's how it became known that he was, in fact, HIV positive. Anyway, he was sentenced to serve until 2009, paroled in 2007, and started to perform live again. But sadly, by 2011, he was no longer. But he left his music behind, and he referred to himself as a bluesologist, and good as any, but some great stuff there. So 888-876-5593, and we're talking with Leah in Marcus Hook, because that's not what she called about. So what'd you call about, Leah?
Oh, I called about Jared Lovett. They named a street for him in Philadelphia yesterday.
Yeah, in South Philly.
Yeah, and on Broad Street between Lombard and South, I think.
Uh-huh.
And they said it was where he grew up or something.
It is.
I think.
It is.
And it's called Jerry Blavitt Way.
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
He heard about it?
Yes, he'd love that. Yes, and this coming weekend, which normally Memories at Margate would be just packed, they're opening it for the final time for Jerry's fans and dancers, and going to do a big to-do at Memories. And Memories, of course, he had owned since 1970 in Margate.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because he made a lot of money from that venue. And if you went, it wasn't the doo-wop you normally heard him play on the radio. Oh, late at night, maybe he'd do that, or early in the evening he'd do that. But for the most part, he was smart. He was playing exactly what kids who like to drink, people in their 20s, wanted to hear. And that was a way to mint money for him all these years. And he owned the location. So his kids have now sold it. And whoever they've sold it to said, yeah, you can have one more performance. So this weekend, Memories will be open to Jerry's dancers and fans. And his daughters have set up some type of charity to have funds donated to. So that's the deal there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just thought that was fascinating that they named the street after him.
He did, yes. Well, and you know, it's all the things that he would have wanted, from what I understand, because, you know, he knew he had myasthenia gravis for a bit of time, so he knew, and he knew the depths of it, so, you know.
What is that exactly?
Myasthenia gravis, MG. It's it's an autoimmune disease, and that's where you attack your muscles. And, you know, ultimately you can lose the ability to swallow and several other things. And it can be fatal. And it also can be managed depending upon the person. I have friends who lived for many, many years with MG. But for Jerry, he pretty much knew it was going to be fatal. And so he was not ashamed. He said, I want a big funeral. And he got one, too. It was, you know, standing room only, and just in the style he would like. So this is the stuff he would bask in. And I'm sure on some level he's there with him.
Yeah, he had a big personality. He liked to do things in a big way, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was interesting. Jerry never worked on the radio at hit radio stations. He always worked at things like WCAM in Camden, or later WHAT. But what put him on the map in Philadelphia was that weekday afternoon dance show that he had. And he had that on Channel 6 and then Channel 10. And those things were huge. I mean, huge. And of course, all along, from before he was even on the radio, he would have these dances. And I'll tell you, at the height of his popularity, he had to hire a helicopter so he could get to like 3 or 4 locations in a night.
Seriously?
And yes. Oh, yes. And but Jerry, in 1970, he by then the television show was over because, interestingly, of course, that whole progressive rock era kind of killed things like dance shows, just killed them deader than can be. Hang on a minute. We'll talk about this. We'll go over this we'll talk hopefully not only to Leah, but to you two coming up for 2 hours, next 2 hours right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, and you're saying, who is that? That's Richie Barrett, and he was the guy who found the Chantels and was in the Valentines and a number of other things as well, originally from Philly, but he recorded that and released it in February of 1958, and that was what Buck Ram heard when he decided he'd have the Platters redo Smoke Gets in Your Eyes in November of 58, but it was the Richie Barrett version that first caught his attention. Now, interestingly, that certainly wasn't the first version, to say the least. That record goes back, that song, I should say, goes back to 1933, if you're ready for that. There have been over 680 known versions. I mention that because, oh man, you guys have me looking for things that don't exist is what's going on. Got a call a couple days ago saying, I want to hear the Roy Orbison version of Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. And I thought to myself, hell, I do too. I wonder what that sounded like. Well, apparently we will wonder forever, since near as I can tell, it doesn't exist. But there are 680 versions, but I thought you might want to hear some of the first one. Like I say, 1933, and Tamara did it, Tamara Dreisen, and she was a girl singer in a band. And so it was musical orchestration by Ray Sinatra. I don't know. As far as that, I haven't bothered to ever find out. Is it a relative or whatever? But Gertrude Nielsen and all that. But in the meantime, Tamara, with whoever the hell she's recording with, came in at about a little over a minute and a half of the song. And yeah, this was what led to 680 versions. Who knew?
I asked me how I knew my true love was true.
All right, go Tamara.
Oh,
So Ray Sinatra actually was Frank's second cousin. He was born in 1904 and died in 1980. A Sicilian-born band leader and conductor. And as far as Tamara, well, I'd have to look up more about what it was all about with Tamara. But I thought about that, the first version, but then I also thought about every time I think of Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, which is, you know, not one of my favorite songs, but I forget. In addition to the one request we had for it in the in the non-existent Roy Orbison vein, and I'm looking for who it was who called in with that so he can call back and address it himself where he thinks he's heard this. But Carol does this great show prep. I just have to find it. Okay, it was a Cleveland Dennis. Okay, he thought Roy Orbison did it. He's usually pretty right too. So I don't know where we'll come up with that. But when I hear it, I always think about the four preps. And as I say, that period on Mercury for the Platters, that pop standards period, was their biggest hits. That's for sure. But so far from my favorites. I like their stuff on Federal and then later their stuff on MusiCorps. But when it came to Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, it was in this.
First we have the Fleetwoods, a very successful group. Let's send them to Alaska to entertain our troops.
When they start in a singing and putting on their show,
the temperature around them will be 45 below.
Well, I'm Mr. Blue. When I say I'm freezing, just turn around, head for the warmth of town. I'm freezing through and through. Call me Mr. Blue.
The Hollywood Argyles, a mighty nice group of kids. We'd like to send them roving on a downhill pair of skids.
There's a group that we heard of that's a awful hip. We kind of like to send them on a little trip. Where they ought to go, we cannot tell. But it's awful hot, and it rhymes with swell.
California?
And while they're down there working, they won't be all alone. They'll run into another group that's even hot back home.
They asked me how I knew our career was through. Something here inside cannot be denied.
And I think about that every time I hear it. So 888-876-5593. Getting back to Leah in Marcus Hook. And I just looked up the thing for July 1st, the benefit at Memories at Margate. And interestingly, I don't know what happened, but they had to refund all the tickets. It says,
wow.
It says, due to circumstances far beyond our control. And so I know they sold, they were $50 each. I know they sold a lot of them. And I have a feeling that probably sold way too many, if you know what I mean. So, But anyway, apparently they are doing a last dance, and it won't be admittance, and it'll just be a few people who'll get in Margate. But that's on July 3rd, which was Jerry's birthday, actually. So starting at 3 p.m. At Memories, and then it'll be the last thing for Memories in Margate.
Oh, okay. Well. Yeah. That'll be nice. I hope they have a good turnout.
Oh, believe me, they'll have the turnout. I hope they don't have the kind of turnout where it'll be they close the place down. But yeah, and I don't know much about the Geeter Gold Foundation or what they're doing for that, but I'll try and find out. But I'll tell you what, it's interesting, and it's sort of, in a way, bittersweet, is so many people have now come out to just adore Jerry Blavitt, but in his lifetime, he had probably more detractors than fans. And in the last 30 years or so, he was not Mr. Popular, to say the least. I mean, there were people who liked him, and they went to the dances, but you would, and you know that, you're in Philly, you'd hear more things that wasn't necessarily good. And now, suddenly, everybody comes out, and he's the greatest ever. So I hope to God he, on some plane, is seeing this, because like I was saying before before the break, is Jerry in 1970, after his dance show ended, he went out to California because he thought he was going to make it big, because, you know, he'd been in that monkey show and all this, and he thought, you know, I'm going to get a career out there. Well, it didn't work out. And so he came back. And when he came back, it was a shock to him, because before he went, he was kind of a big star, and, you know, he was always having these big dinners and, you know, picking up the checks and all that kind of stuff. He comes back and suddenly no one's around. He was as cold as ice. And boy, did this affect him, because he just didn't expect it. He didn't understand that people talk to the chair, not to the person, when you're a public person. And so it took him a while to regroup. But the start of it was, you know, buying Memories in Margate and really working it where that became successful, you know, fairly quickly. And then continuing to do the gigs. I mean, as recent as last summer, he was working like 6 gigs a week at 82 years old. So, you know, he absolutely worked it. But, there were a number of people and a number of rivalries. You know, I had one friend in radio. His name will, I'll keep it off the radio because there's no reason to mention it. But he literally stopped talking to me when he found out that I was tight with Jerry. And
I'm not.
And I thought, okay, then. So there was that type of animosity going on, but, you know,
I'd
known Jerry for decades, and, you know, I knew the good, the bad, and the very ugly as far as that went. And, you know, I liked him for what he was, but it never occurred to me what he wasn't, if you know what I mean. So some of these accolades, I say, well, that's a little over the top, but okay. I just wish that he was around to see it. And hopefully
he did
the
Springfield Inn, too, for so many years.
Oh, I know, on Friday nights, absolutely. You bet he was a regular at the Springfield. Yeah, that was
Delaware County.
Yes, that was one of the gigs that, you know, that was probably 20 years of Friday nights. They paid him every week. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And then in the
he was all over.
Well,
he was
right.
All over.
And in the summers, it was crazy because he not only did, you know, Memories on Friday and Saturday nights, he was there, but he did all the casinos. And some of them, it was like 3 appearances in a day. And, he'd do it.
That's
crazy. And he'd drive home to South Philly every night.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He drove like a maniac. I was always surprised that didn't take him out of the game.
Yeah, well, I always admired him for his energy, you know.
Well, he always had that, but more than energy, he was absolutely driven. And I mentioned this many times. I was at his apartment at the time on his 45th birthday, and I remember this so well because he was saying, "Well, I'm hanging it up in 5 years. I got it all together," and you know, and he said, "Listen," I said, "Jerry, you will not." "Oh, what do you mean? What do you mean, my love?" You know, I said, "You will not." I said, "Jerry, you don't understand. You must do this." And I said, "You will die doing it." And I said, "If you're lucky, you'll die on stage doing it, but you will die doing it." "Oh, no, you don't understand." I said, "No, Jerry, you don't understand.
You don't understand, right?
And I knew.
Right.
He could not have stayed alive if he didn't have that. It was his whole persona. He had to do that. And because, you know, he always had something to prove, because from his childhood, those are childhood wounds. You know, Jerry always had to prove it and did very, very well, you know. But some of his business partners wouldn't have very kind things to say. But he was shrewd, to say the least. You know, he used to own Lost Night Records with Jerry Green, who later went on to do oldies.com and collectibles. But anyhow, they also owned Crimson. And when they decided to split their partnership, you know, they did amicably, and they wrote it up and all that, and Jerry got this, and Jerry Green got that, and that's the way it was. Well, what wasn't in the contract for Lost Night was Crimson. Well, guess what happened the next year? Expressway to Your Heart by the Soul Survivors.
I love that song.
Yes, well, so did Blavitt, because he went to Jerry Green and said, "Hey, I'm half owner of this label. Give me my royalties." And
yeah,
Green had to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so, that was that was not a happy moment. But he had the right, you know. I mean, anybody, you know, said he was doing something unethical. No, it was perfectly legal. It just wasn't a happy time. So he
rented a helicopter at one point to get to all his gigs?
There is a big article, and I still have the magazine somewhere. I think it was either in Look or in Life, one of those big magazines they had about that. And they showed the helicopter and they showed all his gigs and all that. Yes, because
was that in the 70s or the 80s?
The 60s. The 60s.
The 60s.
This is absolutely the 60s. This was when he was on the air at WHAT and also when he had the television show. And the reason for the helicopter was because, as you know, the Philadelphia market is not that small. So if he had a gig in Bristol and his next gig was in Chester County, he wasn't going to get there in the same night easily.
No. Uh-uh.
So he had a helicopter.
That's just great.
Yeah.
Just great.
Yeah, and he always lived in South Philly, lived at Society Hill Towers. Oh, yeah.
Yep. That's just great. Well, I just think it's great that they named a street
after him. Did. And like I say, he lived life on his terms, tortured though it may have been. But
and he was a Philly guy.
Through and through and through. And this is just what he would have wanted.
Yeah. And so I'm glad.
Yeah, me too.
I'm glad.
So. All right.
All right. Well, you have a good night, Raleigh.
Right, you
Thank
too. Thanks.
You
Appreciate
my call.
It. All right.
All right.
So,
bye.
888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, I know all of Jerry's secrets, and no, I'll never share them. All right, so we'll get to Paul in Iroquois County. We'll get to Marianne in Chicago, and hopefully you too on WGN Radio.
Gee whiz, I can't believe that you love me. I can't believe that an angel like you could fall in love with me so tenderly. Gee whiz, why do I thrill when you kiss me? My heart stands still when I'm holding your hand. The feeling is oh, so grand. Oh, so grand. How do you talk to an angel? What words should I say?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. This is my all-time favorite record. Gee whiz, it's Bob and Earl. It's 1958. It's on Class Records, Leon Renee's wonderful label. And Bobby Day, who was Bob of Bob and Earl, would have turned 95 this weekend. Born in 1928 in Fort Worth, Texas, and died in Los Angeles, sadly, 1990, too young, 62 years old of cancer. But I just thought that Gee Whiz was just the absolute best. And, you know, you see Rockin' Robin and Little Bitty Pretty One and Over, and It's All I Want and all that kind of thing. But you almost never hear about Bob and Earl. And, of course, they were best known for writing the original version of Harlem Shuffle. But it was Bobby Bird and Earl Nelson. And, of course, Bobby Bird becomes Bobby Day. Yeah, that's how that happened. All right, so there you have it. And we'll get to Paul in Iroquois County and talk radio. Marianne in Chicago's got a request. And let's see, Gerald and Henry wants to talk about Coast to Coast. Oh, man. All that coming up and more on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Syl Johnson on the High label, so you know it came out of Memphis. Interestingly, it came out of Memphis in 1975, and it was on High, so it's not surprising that Willie Mitchell produced it. Also not surprising that Al Green co-wrote it, but he did. So there it is. Take Me to the River. And I actually played Syl Johnson because he's tied into one of these days in history. Let me, right, that's what made me think of it. So now let me find it before anything else. Yeah, here we would have turned 87 Saturday, born in 1936 in Holly Springs, Mississippi. Died last year, February 2002, of congestive heart failure at 85. And interestingly, his brother Jimmy died 6 days earlier in Harvey, Illinois. Jimmy was 93. So, yeah. And yeah, Syl Johnson, just terrific. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, Paul is in Iroquois County. Thanks for waiting, Paul. Paul didn't wait. Oh, well. He almost did. It was a long time. So sorry about that, Paul. He wanted to talk radio, too, and I would love to talk radio. So there's one line available now. Paul, call back, and we will do that. In the meantime, Marianne had a request if she's still hanging in there. So, Marianne, are you there?
Hi, Raleigh. How are you?
All right. How about yourself?
Okay. Since I'm in Chicago, I got a real big kick out of Smoke It's in Your Eyes.
Well, yes, yes. Well, that was a request just for Chicago, yes. And the rest of North America that's being filled with the toxins from fighting the Canadian smoke.
So thank you for that. And last night I got quite a chuckle when you played Ico and I Love Onions.
Yes.
That brought back so many memories.
Good.
And it's funny because, you know, I had my surgery a week ago Monday. And they say if you're a smoker, don't smoke after surgery. And right. I go outside, I don't have a choice, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's right. If you're outside breathing, that's a reason to stay indoors. Now, have you still...
Yeah, but you know what? I've been... 2 days ago, for the first time in 5 years, I was able to get in the shower without screaming out in pain.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that's so quick after the surgery. That's absolutely wonderful. So have you started your physical therapy yet?
Tomorrow is my last in-home therapy. They're releasing me.
Okay.
The therapist couldn't believe because he had mentioned the stairs that I have to go up and down. And I said, oh, you want to see me go up and down the stairs?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, what are you going to do with your walker? I said, I'm going to bring it with.
Right.
And he watched me. I said, this is what I've been doing for 5 years. And I went down the stairs one at a time with the walker, back up the stairs. And he goes, this is unbelievable.
That's great.
And I said, well, I live alone, so I had to learn to take care of myself. Otherwise, you know, what happens?
Absolutely.
But how is John doing with his therapy?
Well, good. He's in aquatic therapy now, which is interesting. The pool is 3 to 4 feet deep, and he walks back and forth for an hour and sideways. So backwards, forwards, sideways. And it's really good exercise. And he walks without assistance. It's very slow and very deliberate, but it's absolutely without any assistance, no assistive devices.
Oh, he's my inspiration.
Yeah.
Because I still have my walker.
Yeah.
But the other day, like I said, first time in 5 years, I was able to stand, put both my feet flat on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Because now both legs are the same length.
Good.
And I always walked hunched over. I had my forearms, like on the arms of the walker, because I felt more secure. And now I can stand up straight and, you know, walk with my hands on the walker, but, you know, like it's like John, slow and deliberate.
Right.
I took myself out on the Thursday after surgery because I was so antsy, and it's not my driving leg, so I went out and went to the store. And
good.
I start outpatient therapy on the 11th.
Okay, great. Where are you going to do it? Where'd you decide to do it?
Well, I was thinking with Illinois Bone and Joint, and luckily, they moved right back into the building 5 minutes from my house in Lincolnwood.
Uh-huh.
So I was happy about that because this way you keep it all in-house and there's no reason that somebody can't go in and see what my progress is or what I need to do.
Right.
So I'll be happy with that. I'm just like, I don't know what it'll be like the first day when I just take steps without a cane or a walker.
It's going to be fine.
I know, but it's been 5 years, Raleigh.
Oh, I know. I know.
You know, it's like I can't remember. I mean, in my mind, I can envision when I was taking care of my mother before she died. I just prance down the stairs, jump in the car, and go to the store for her.
Right.
And there's no more of that.
Well, I think to an extent, certainly it's going to be tentative for a while, but ultimately it's like riding a bicycle where, you know, in short order, it'll come back. It'll take a while for it to be second nature or you know, like I say, anything.
Your muscle memory comes back.
Yes, absolutely. I think.
I mean, the first time he told me to stand up, and that was the day after surgery, and I was in a lot of pain, and I'm not a big baby. And he said, stand up and move this leg forward. And my brain was trying to tell my leg to move, and it took a while to get it to move. And now it's like you say, second nature.
Right, right.
My heel's on the floor now, where before the first 2 days, out of habit, I kept walking on the ball of my foot because I had to.
Exactly. No, it'll be like that all the way around. You want to just be sure that you don't take it too fast. You know, when you start to get going again, just continue to be deliberate for quite a while.
Well, and you know, there's certain, I told him there's certain exercises he gave me that I'm a little uncomfortable doing when I'm home alone.
Then don't.
Yeah, and he said he understood.
Right.
But, you know, I did the exercises. At first I was hesitant when they said to ice it.
Yeah.
Because the first thing I remember was coming in out of recovery. Okay, I've got a fresh incision, and they jammed this ice thing up against it.
Yeah,
I want to go through the ceiling.
Yeah.
So the last thing, and then the night I came home of the surgery, I had must have had a slight fever because every time I got up to go to the bathroom, I had horrible chills. And then that's the last thing I want to think about is putting an ice pack on me, right?
Oh, right, right.
Well, I thought about it and thought about it, and I came outside because it was a blistering hot day, and I started putting that ice pack on everything, and lo and behold.
Yeah, it was fine.
It was like, it's like a miracle drug. I can touch the top of my leg now. I can massage it without screaming.
Right. No, it's
like, I can run my hand over the pad where the incision is, and I feel a little tinge, but I don't want to touch it too much because I'm afraid it'll get itchy.
Exactly, but it's going to get better.
Forward, I had to get a ruler and go in there and scratch my arm.
Yeah, well, no, it's all good news. That's wonderful.
Yeah, finally.
All right, good.
But you know what? I was going to make a request.
Yes.
And I still miss the heck out of Scotty.
Yes.
Can you play something upbeat for me that Scotty would like?
Yeah, I've got his request list right here. I'll go through it, and I'll find it just for you.
Okay, and then one, would you mind playing for me, like, some kind of upbeat song for Carol, from Carole King?
Okay. Yeah, my play.
You don't want to.
No, my player first one. Might as well rain until September. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay, Raleigh, you guys all have a real good night, and God bless you all, and have a safe holiday.
Yeah, you too. So now, before we hear from Walter, and we will in moments, I know, but I think that Natalie, a first-time caller in Aruba, well, where are you, Natalie?
In Aurora.
Aurora. It said you were in Aruba. I thought, man, that's going to kill my phone bill. But, all right.
Oh, no.
Aurora. And you wanted to know about that 5-CD set?
Yes, is that available, like Amazon?
You know, it might be. I'll tell you what it was called. It was called Love on the Dance Floor. The label was Connoisseur Collection, and the label number, it said Love CD 1. And it was a 5-CD compilation, and it's got Gladys Knight and Patti Austin and Freddie Jackson, Rose Royce, Ray Parker Jr., Natalie Cole, Jeffrey Osborne, Ruby Turner, Steve Arrington, Chic, Mays, James Ingram, Sly Fox, Imagination, Chris Rea, Andrew Gold, Air Supply, 10cc, Eric Carmen, and that's just volume one. So, so Love on the Dance Floor. Let me go to Amazon and see if they even know what this is. You know, these things show up occasionally. And you wait till you see a good price. You know, you don't go crazy about this for sure. So let's see. Love on the Dance Floor. What are they? Okay, here we go. By various artists. Do you have any? One used $69.99. Don't do that. But, I mean, it's up to you. But it's $69.99. You know, me, I'd just be patient, but I'm genetically cheap. So I'll leave it to you. But they have one left at $69.99.
Oh, just one.
Yeah, well, the reason it's just one is they're used. You know, none of this stuff can be new because, of course, this came out in 1989. And, you know, this kind of a label, God only knows what happened to this label. So it's where you're going to find, you know, like I try eBay, too. Let's real quickly do that and see what we get there. Maybe they'll have, and you know, like I say, if you're patient, good things come to those who wait. I usually get everything I want as long as I'm willing to, you know, wait a while to get it. But yeah, they'll all be used. They can't be anything but, because I don't think it's been minted since 1989. And eBay's not coming up. I wonder what's wrong with eBay right now. Come on, eBay. All right.
No, something went wrong.
Oh, I see. Something went wrong. I'm not on the air. I'm not?
No.
Yeah, you were gone for a while.
I've been gone for a
little
while.
Bit.
Huh. Well,
yeah,
what's interesting is that
hear you.
What's interesting is we're still on the phone because that's equally dependent. Well, I guess I'm going to tell you on the air what eBay has to say because I better figure out how to get back on the air.
Keep
listening. I promise to tell you.
All right.
Okay, thanks. You. Appreciate it. All right.
Bye.
Yeah, now. So Adam's not there. Oh, you are here. So John says I'm not on the air. Am I not? Oh, I am here. All right. So it's no big deal. So, all right. It's plenty of time for me to say, and now it's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
What should I write? What can I say?
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that'll teach Marianne for saying I could pick the Carole King record, but up tempo, there it is. That was the first one on Dimension, 1962. It might as well rain until September. All right, so 888-876-5593. And we had Natalie, a first-time caller, before I almost went away but didn't. Now, I want to tell you, Natalie, there apparently is another Loves on the Dance Floor. And the problem with this is it's not the same Love on the Dance Floor 5-CD set. It's got things like Dan Hartman and Benny King. And by the way, there's a ton of them on eBay. But what I found was the one you want, Love on the Dance Floor. And they don't have a box, but they have the 5 CDs, and that's all you need. And it's cheap, but there's shipping. And the cheap is, in Euro, it's $18.99, so that's about $20 here, maybe $21, but not more than that, for 5 CDs. So that's a good price. So where is the problem? The problem is in the shipping. And I think it's about $20 in shipping. But they've got it, and they've got it in like new. So you can, it's all 5 CD, and that is right there on Amazon. And so it's coming from Italy, if you're ready for that. But it's certainly inexpensive. So there you go, Love on the Dance Floor. But you only want the one that has 5 CDs, all right? And it's there. So, yeah, Euro Well, here's one, Euro 1646, so $17.94 U.S., so says eBay, subject to change at any moment. So shipping, again, is going to be $20, so figure that. But anyway, that's, you know, $37 for five CDs is not bad. So, all right, I'm glad we had this conversation. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And Natalie, I hope you'll call me again sometime. I won't rudely leave you. If I, you know, in the instance that I think we're not on the air, well, it's hard to tell, really. But we have, and that's true during the entire show, we have another hour to talk with you, and we'll start with Michael on the road, taking me for a ride again. I love to ride. How's it going, Michael?
Great, Raleigh. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you, thank you.
I just wanted to mention that I saw Gil Scott-Heron in Edinburgh, Scotland in the late 90s. And I had no idea who he was, but my at the time of the key, my second wife, she was really into him, and I enjoyed the concert. It was a small venue. It was ideal, you know. He must have been, I don't know, in his 60s then, maybe older.
Yeah, it's neat.
The other thing I want to mention, Raleigh, is I went to see Andy Warhol exhibition at College of DuPage today. Uh-huh. Well worth the time, and I didn't realize how involved he was with the Velvet Underground, you know.
Uh-huh.
The manager produced it, you know.
Yep.
Very impressive.
Absolutely, sir.
I wanted to find out if you'd be kind enough to play a song. It goes way back. It's Ernest Tubb. Give me some of that old-fashioned love.
Okay. All right.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. I'll do it.
On our way to Green Bay, by the way, Rob.
Oh, good. I love to ride. Good, good. Take me to the museum while you're there. I like that Green Bay Hall of Fame Museum.
Got it.
All right. Thanks.
Green Bay Packers fan, too. All right, Raleigh.
All right, good deal.
Good,
appreciate it. Yes, indeed. Well, it could have been worse. I thought we were going to hear something from the Exploding Plastic Inevitable Tour. That was in 1966 with The Velvet Underground and Nico and Andy Warhol. And we've got another hour to talk with you, and I hope you'll join us here on WGN Radio.
Give me that old-time religion. That old-time religion is good enough for me. It's good for our mothers. It was good for our mothers. It was good for our mothers. It's good enough for me.
James, and that's Dr. John and Willie Nelson, and it's not exactly the version that Michael on the road had in mind, but here is the deal. Everybody and their brother sang some of that old-time religion, and under Give Me Some of That, Give Me some of that, and in one case, the old-time religion, and Ernest Tubb was none of them. All right, so with that in mind, yes, I looked through over 135 versions of that song, going to the first one in 1906, which was the Haydn Quartet and Orchestra, when it was the Old Time Religion, to the present, pretty much. And I can tell you that in the exhaustive search, Ernest Tubb was nowhere on the list. So that's Dr. John and Willie Nelson. That was actually Dr. John's last album, released posthumously on Rounder, and things happen that way. All right, so WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, and I prove that I play requests. So, yeah, to say the least. All right, so what do we have here? I believe that Geraldine Henry is next. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
Good. Yeah, I was calling you on the way home, and I actually, while waiting, I actually made it home.
Okay, right. So you're done. Time to say goodnight. All right. Well, thanks for taking me.
No, we're night owls. We don't go to bed. Right. I work second shift, so.
Okay. All right. So what's up? What's on your mind?
Well, we have a small podcast, you know, on YouTube, and we talk about all the strangeness, you know, around, like you used to do on Coast to Coast. And I was kind of curious about what your favorite stories are. What do you have, any memorable ones that you really like? Or,
you know, when I did it in 99, when I was going to be Art Bell's replacement till I walked, I had a good time. When I did it again in 2007, I hated it. But, you know, George Norrie had pretty much tubed the show by then. But in the art days, it was great. And there were a number of people. One of them that I thought about was a guy who swore he was the reincarnation of the builder of the Titanic. And he had great great memories, too. So I really liked him. I don't know why he stood out. But, you know, there were a number of them. It was great because, you know, Art had built such a big audience that basically if you just turned on your microphone, the phones would ring. And you know, the listeners had great stories.
Right.
So, yeah, but the guy who built the Titanic, and he wrote a book. I don't remember what the book was, but he did. But, yeah, he was fascinating because he had all sorts of information that he shouldn't have had, you know, that kind of things.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. Almost like a reincarnation kind
of
deal.
That's exactly what it was. He was the reincarnation there. So tell me about your podcast. Where can it be heard?
Oh, so you want me to say?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. We're located here in Central Illinois, and on YouTube, it's Midwest Night Watchers, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube and Twitch and all that. And okay. we have a little following. We haven't been doing it real long. We've been obviously since Art Bell. You know, I started listening to him in the '90s. You know,
right.
So I've been following all that ever since then, and hearing stories and.
Well,
since the pandemic, everybody was at home, so, you know, we started a podcast just like everybody else, and
that's great.
Started having people on.
No, that's great. You know, you mentioned Art, and while I never interviewed the guy, my all-time favorite Art Bell bit was Mel's Hole.
I know, I love that one.
I did, too. I was telling a friend about it, and he said, well, let's go to Wenatchee. I said, there's no hole. And he said, no, I don't know, there could be. No, we're not going to Wenatchee. There's no hole. But, yeah, he was ready to get on a plane. So, the Mel Holes thing was just great, you know, the way a guy would talk about it. And late at night, you could see it was darker over the hole, and you could throw a whole refrigerator in, and you'd never hear it hit the bottom. And I just loved it. Yeah,
my favorite that I've listened to it many times since then was the guy that was supposedly on the Philadelphia experiment and told his whole story. And it was like a 4-hour interview or something.
Absolutely, yes. Cameron and then it got into Montauk and all that kind of stuff. Yes. They were wonderful. And there were two guys, actually, that were involved with that who Art would have on. I loved those. I agree. Those were just terrific. There were so many. As far as near death, my favorite was when I interviewed Vicky, who was blind, and in her near-death, event, she saw. And I thought that was fascinating, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just did a near-death show not too long ago, like a week ago.
Yeah.
And there were so many people in the chat and stuff that just had near-death experiences.
Yes.
You know, and they came on and shared. It's just fascinating.
I agree. And those were great shows, you know. And what's interesting is how often there were similarities. There were also differences, but so many of the things would occur again and again and again. And I think you're talking about Al Bielek was the guy who Art had on for the Philadelphia Experiment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I read a story, and Al had his brother, too, I believe. Yeah.
And,
but he passed away during the whole thing.
Right. Oh, yes. And but it was just great. And I absolutely believed the deal with the Philadelphia Experiment. The eerie part were the people when it was in Norfolk who wound up in the hull. You know, they were part of the boat. That was really scary.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you could hear them wail and, you know, and then some of them would have arms sticking out,
right.
Their faces sticking out of metal.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Man, that's the kind of stuff, man, the middle of the night, it's just terrific. Drive along and, you know, you're listening and you're someplace like Wyoming and, you know, three people to the square mile and you're hearing this stuff. And after a while, you kind of turn on your dome light because you want some company. Yeah.
The right company anyway.
Well, right. Exactly. And all the Montauk projects stuff, you know, and time travel and all of that. Yeah, Preston Nichols was the other guy who, with Al Bielek, would very often be on. So, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. So, I remember all of it, and I loved it. It was a great show.
I was going to say, do you ever miss it and want to get back into it?
Well, it doesn't exist anymore, you know, is the truth. I mean, like I say, Art was made for that show. And as you know, if you used to listen to him in the early days, he didn't start out that way. It was just Sunday nights when he had Dreamland. Monday through Friday was a political show. And then it went from Dreamland into the paranormal topics all the time. But it was a part of Art's personality. He was just made to do it. But no, at this stage in life, I do this show as a favor to a friend who I owe literally my professional life in the last three decades. So if he says jump, I say how high. But this is my last hurrah. Whenever it comes to an end, I will not be doing this again. You know, I own some radio. I own some radio stations and a cell tower, and I'm old. So that's why I can't do five nights a week, because it's no longer physically possible for me. So this is the last hurrah.
All right. Well, if you'd ever want to come on, you're welcome to come on our show and tell us some stories.
That's so nice. Well, I'll tell you, don't ask me this year, because, you know, John had a stroke, and so I'm you know,
right,
splitting my time in so many different directions. I'm lucky if I see email. But ask me next year, and I'll be happy to do it if I'm still around.
Okay, that'd be wonderful.
But in the meantime, keep us updated on the show, Midwest Night Watchers. I can't wait to look it up, and I will.
Find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch.
All right, so now let me ask you one more question. Of all the things you've done so far, and I know it's a pretty new show, but even so, of all the things you've done so far, what's been the weirdest?
The weirdest has been my partner. We're on a platform, which, you know, YouTube's trying to stop everybody from simulcasting. New rules come out, but we're not monetized or anything because we're, you know, so little so far. But my partner on the other channel, he has had near-death experiences, and he's a Native American, and he tells all of his stories about the Sasquatch being with them, the dog man, you know, and the Native Americans. And and his near-death experience, he talked about being able to walk on the other side and experience what's going on. And he says now he still has the ability to go on dimensionally on both sides of the world whenever he wants.
Okay, so has he seen the Akashic Records?
He says he gets downloads. I don't know if he's actually seen them when he's on the other side or not.
So when he's on the other side, of course, there's no time. So what is the likely future here on our plane?
You know, he has not said.
Oh, you have to ask. And I say likely because, of course, we have free will and, you know, the future's not a line extension of the past and things could change. But even so, I'd be curious what insights he's got. You'll have to ask him on the podcast some night.
I will.
All right.
But our favorite show so far that me and my wife co-host our show.
Okay.
And our favorite one so far is Steve Stockton we had on, and he's been on Coast to Coast. And he talked about the fae folk and the fairies and all the elementals.
Oh, yeah.
That by far was our favorite show so far.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, that can kind of drive you crazy. So that's great. All right. Well, excellent. Well, good luck with the show. Keep me posted.
I will. I'll get back a hold of you later on. Hopefully next year we'll have you on.
All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah, I keep thinking it'll get better next year. Now, of course, the truth is, you know, as John will attest, I've been saying that for a number of years. Oh, next year is going to be easier. But, yeah, I feel maybe next year is the one. I don't know. We'll see. So, in the meantime, we got Brian, we got Mike, we got Jane, we got, Stacy and James. So, I'll try to be less winded and talk to all of you coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I should have had a bumper there, but I was looking something else up. Sorry about that. So, right. Plus, more time to talk to you, Brian, in Jeff City, Missouri. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. How you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. It's pretty hot here in central Missouri. It's going to be about 100 degrees today with the heat index.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. But, I'm trying to think back. Did you do weekends in 2007 on Coast to Coast? Or?
Yeah, that was pretty disappointing. But yes. But originally 99 and early 2000.
Yeah, I remember that, when you did that, when Art was kind of off and on,
right,
back and forth.
Right, and they knew Art was going to be leaving and all that. Yes.
Yeah, and then, I remember Art, for a while there, after his wife Ramona passed on, he was doing some weekends because he married that girl from the Philippines.
Right, absolutely, yes, Aaron, and he
Aaron,
was.
Yeah.
He was. It was funny because her name was Irene, but he didn't know that. When he first read her name, he thought it was Aaron. He liked that better.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, because they set it up where he was doing the show from over in Manila.
Yes, he was. He was.
Stuff,
you
so.
Betcha.
And
I
then,
remember.
Then they moved back to Paramus, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if – I haven't heard if – his wife is still living out there?
I believe that she is, because she became kind of between a rock and a hard place, because now their daughter is a teenager and all that, and so she has two American kids. And it's when I say that, I mean with culture and all that. And so it's hard to, move kids like that. And she didn't live in Manila originally. She lived in the country. It would not have been, I think, really good for them. So as far as I know, I don't know because I didn't know her, obviously. But as far as I know, she's still there. And, I can't... can't imagine she left, but then again, I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, are most radio stations these days 24/7, like AM and FM stations?
Well, in terms of broadcasting, yes, but in terms of live programming, no.
Yeah. Well, the reason I was thinking of that, I remember back in the 70s when I grew up, when I was in grade school, we had two AM stations here in town, and they were just 18-hour stations. They came on at 6 in the morning, and they went off at midnight. And then we didn't have anything overnight, nothing live or anything. And then they came on back again at 6.
Yeah, that was not uncommon. And I'll tell you, you mentioned Art Bell. The show that really influenced him in many ways was Herb Jepko's Nightcaps, which came out of KSL in Salt Lake City. And Herb had been their midday personality back playing music in the early 60s, and he went to them because KSL signed off at midnight and said, I got an idea for a show overnights I'd like to do. And they said, well, we can give you the time, but it'll have to be yours to monetize it, and if it doesn't work out, we won't be able to bring you back to middays because we'll hire somebody else. So in other words, basically what they did was they said, yeah, we don't care, but we're not going to help. And so he, of course, took that time, and really, the Nightcaps was just terrific at first. His big mistake was selling it to Mutual. That was his downfall. But before that, sure. So, many stations. Before Todd Storrs bought WQAM in Miami, we used to say it stood for We Quit at Midnight, because the Miami Herald owned it, and they would sign off at midnight. So that was not uncommon, just like television. Usually, you'd hear the national anthem, right after.
Oh, yeah.
after either the 11 o'clock news or the show that was on after it. In fact, I remember in the 60s, the first time I had seen all-night television was when I was in Las Vegas, and I thought this was great. The only problem was half the time, the movie, midway through it, would just shift to something else. And then later I found out that it was because Howard Hughes owned the station, and if he didn't he didn't like the movie, he'd call him and say, change the movie. But nonetheless, it was still on, and that was sort of neat. So, yes, a lot of stations signed off at midnight.
Yeah, but hey, how did, like, in the early 70s, like when Casey Kasem started his American Top 40, how did they get the programs to the stations? Was that
vinyl
around?
Vinyl.
Really, records?
Yeah, I still have some of them. I worked for Watermark, and even in 79, when I wrote and produced something called Soundtrack of the 60s with Murray the K. And we were still doing vinyl, and it would be on reel to reel tape, and then sometimes it'd be me driving to Camarillo, California, to drop them off, and then they would be mastered onto disc. And so I would say, even after the advent of satellite, most programs were still sent on vinyl through the mid 80s.
Wow. So there had to be a quick turnaround because Casey did that weekly.
Yeah, but it wasn't hard to do the turnaround. You know, they were set up to do that, and so that was everything. The first thing that Westwood ever did, the history of Motown, which is still the oddest damn thing I ever heard, the 24-hour history of Motown that was neither chronological nor alphabetical, but it was 24 hours, and that came on disc. I still have all the discs. I figure it's kind of like an exhibit. No one would believe it if they didn't hear it. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. We'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Give me a little old-fashioned love, the kind that lingers through the years, the kind that's made by God above. Just give me a little old-fashioned love. Now you can have the girls with rosy cheeks, the ones that coo like turtle dove. I just want a simple girl that's sweet. So give me a little old-fashioned love. Oh, Billy Bird, now. Now you can have the girls that dress so nice, from their heads down to their little feet. But if you want some real good advice, the old-fashioned girls just can't be beat.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So Michael called back and said, no, not old-time religion. I want old-fashioned love. All right, well, Ernest Tubb, that was a flip side in 1950, and still was a top 10 record because he was so hot. The Texas Troubadour, and what was the A side of that? Throw Your Love Away, I think, on Decca. But to give me a little old-fashioned love, got, like I said, a number 9 on the country charts, and of course nothing else. And he was just huge, because John had come and asked something, as if he did like 10 records. I said, no, try about 1,000, And of course he had his own Ernest Tubb record shop in Nashville, and that started in the 40s, and he'd broadcast from there very, very often. So yeah, it didn't get too much bigger than Ernest Tubb. All right, so 888-876-5593, and we're talking to Brian in Jefferson City, who was asking about syndicated radio and how AT40 and American Country Countdown and all that got to stations. And like I say, it was on vinyl through the mid 80s. It wasn't it wasn't until Watermark was sold to ABC that it went to satellite delivery.
Okay, I guess that's how most all stations now do their
Syndicated shows, sure, but the big difference wasn't delivery. It was that when American Top 40 started, that was a cash show. And in very big markets, that was $300 a week. That was a pricey show. No, not in small markets, but it was all cash. And what Norm Pattiz did at Westwood was he brought back barter. Barter had been completely out of favor due to problems in the 50s with income tax of all things. But in any event, initially, Pattitz was hitting urban stations and album stations. And, you know, they were more than happy to give up the airtime. But as time went on, and you know how Barter works, you don't pay for the show, you just run the commercials. But ultimately, radio stations did that to their own peril because they wound up losing their national rate cards.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Do stations like Today have to pay for, like, if they want to carry, like, when Rush Limbaugh was still around or Sean Hannity, do they have to pay?
Rush was a combination. Normally, it's just barter. But Rush was so big, it was barter and cash.
Mm-hmm.
So both.
Okay.
But most shows you hear, they just have to run the commercials.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Talking about Ernest Tubb, when you lived in Nashville, did you ever go to his Midnight Jamboree when you were down there?
Yeah, I, you know, went to a few things, and, you know, of course, the Ernest Tubb's record shop and all that, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
By then he was 60, and he was considered the old guard. You know, when country-politan came in the latter 60s, that was the start of the change to get rid of the twang and all that. So by the 60s, the end of the 60s, he really wasn't doing much in the way of hits. Now, I mean, Thanks a Lot in 63 was a top five record, but, you know, one of my favorites was actually 69. And they did not chart well, but Saturday Saint and Sunday Saint. But these were, you know, non-charting records. So what was weird is in the 80s, this was his last chart record, and I guess under his own name, his last stuff would be in the 70s. But in the 80s, it was Ernest Tubb with Hank Williams Jr., Waylon Jennings, and they did Leave Them Boys Alone.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, when we used to go down in the mid-1980s, his son, Justin, used to do the Midnight Jamboree for many years, and then he passed on in the late 90s. I think he did it probably up till he passed on. So.
Well, Justin was also a heck of a little songwriter.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I think more than anything else, he made his money from writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he used to... Usually most weeks, Justin was on the Opry most Friday and Saturday nights.
Yeah,
he'd go over and do the Midnight Jamboree.
He absolutely was. A lot of those, you know, basically old-time guys, because even Justin, you know, he was born in like the mid-30s. But, you know, he wrote Lonesome 77203, Hawkshaw Hawkins. That was a lot of money. And, in fact, in the 50s, his roommate was Roger Miller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's all the deal. And, still, even a Justin would be considered, again, old guard. And the Opry was interesting. If you were a member, as you know, you had to give them a couple performances a year, and a lot of the big stars didn't like doing that because you only got scale. You didn't get much money for that at all. So usually on the Opry's, you had a lot of the mainstays, the people who no longer were having chart hits, but were, you know, crowd pleasers. And
Roy Acuff and Miss Minnie Pearl.
And
Bill Monroe,
And, of course, Roy Acuff, you know, that again, Acuff Rowe's biggest publisher. You know, that was very, very political.
You know, I think even now WSM, they're automated overnights from like midnight to 5.
Well, probably.
It's just nothing but just music back to back. So
probably. Now, of course, remember, it wasn't until the 80s that WSM was playing country music in the day. They, just like WLAC wasn't playing R&B in the day. In the day, they were playing adult contemporary music. In fact, on WSM's Afternoon Drive Guy was Pat Sajak. And
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's actually very good. But they were playing, like I say, adult contemporary music. And then on overnights, they had Harold Hensley, who is an Opry announcer, who also had been a pro.
Yeah, I remember Harold.
And he was doing the road show, you know, the trucking thing. And
after Ralph kind of left in 72.
Because he went on to his own empire. But and Ralph before that, of course, had been at WMAK. He was a top 40 jock. But but no, back in the 70s, WSM, AM did not admit much. They played the Grand Ole Opry, of course, and they played the overnight show. But other than that, they were not country, because country was an embarrassment to Nashville.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Hey, what is the easiest way to find your archive shows on your website? Is there a link you need to go to?
Yeah, absolutely. If you just go to Rolly.net, Rolly.net, there's you can just click on downloads and you'll see it.
Downloads, okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I'll let you get some other callers.
I'm glad you called. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Talk to you next week.
All right, good deal. Thanks. So 888-876-5593-8888-Rolly. And let's see, what do we have here? Gosh, the evening's going so quickly, so I'll try to be more succinct. Mike in Mount Pleasant, what's up, Mike?
Hi there. I'm glad somebody brought up the topic of Art Bell and his programs in the 90s. That's when I started listening to him. I was driving taxis back then.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Mel's whole story very well.
It was great.
There was one episode I'll never forget. Some guy in Washington State supposedly was out in the woods, and he smacked some alien with a tree branch, knocked it unconscious, brought it back to his house, stuck it into a refrigerator, and one day, when he opened the refrigerator, he actually filmed it. And he opened up, and the audio was a squealing sound of the alien.
Oh, that's crazy.
And Art Bell played it on the air.
Of course.
Do you remember that episode?
Yes, of course. Why wouldn't he? It was made for Art. Of course. Perfect.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That and Mel's Hole are just like classics. And
yes.
By the way, whatever happened to Mel's Hole? I mean,
There was no hole.
Fairy tale?
Of course it was. And, you know, the way the guy said, because Art was ready to, like, come up there and stuff. Oh, no, it's cordoned off now. The military won't let me on my own land and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, of course, it was complete fabrication. That's what made it, you know, so great, because it was wonderful. So,
I believed it. I thought it was a real
no,
thing.
No, you did not, really.
Well.
You did not. And, you know, it would be things like people claiming that they were released from Area 51, you know, and, you know, you got to hurry and find me. I'm going to be triangulated and the government's going to, all that stuff. Yeah. And sure, there were all these people that they were wonderful because they obviously got the real spirit of the show. But no, there was no melon. There was no hole.
I'm gullible. Forgive me. I thought it was a real thing.
No, it wasn't. They didn't drop cows down the hole. No. No.
But you remember the thing with the alien and the refrigerator?
Yes, all of that stuff. I mean, there were so many. So, yeah, you can... and I'm sure some of those shows are still on YouTube.
I've heard plenty of crystal ball salesmen and fairy tale sellers with... George Norrie.
Well,
I thought Art Bell would just cut through the BS or insist on a real thing only, not fairy tales.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Art. No, Art was a showman that way. He really was. And he made those shows just a joy to listen to.
So. There was no Mel's Hole.
I'm sorry to break it to you. It's kind of like finding out about Santa Claus, but there was no Mel and there was no hole.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. I should have been kinder. I didn't realize you didn't know. But
you and your reality.
Yes, the bottomless pit. Yeah, all right. Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Yeah. See ya.
Never heard anything hit the ground. Not the refrigerator, not the cow. But 888-876-5593-8888-Rolly. Jane has a request in Milwaukee. What you want to hear, Jane?
I've been waiting so long.
It's true. I'm sure you have.
Yeah, tell me something. I'm a Scorpio. What are you?
Oh, Capricorn.
Oh, you're Mrs. Practicality then.
Yeah, well, that's my sun sign. All right, so what you want to hear?
I wanted to hear Tobacco Road. I don't even know who.
The Nashville Teens.
Okay. Because I had that song on tape years ago. I don't know if I still have the tape or not, but I don't... Yeah, I used to record off the radio many years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm 67, mm-hmm. And sometimes they never announce those names of the Who.
No,
I would write Jane's music on tape.
Right.
I didn't.
No, I'll play that for you. John D. Loudermilk wrote it, and the Nashville Teens were the people who had the hit. And I will play that for you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling.
All right.
And we'll get to Stacy. We'll get to James, hopefully, and that'll probably wrap up the week on WGN Radio.
I was born in
tobacco road. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Grew up in a rusty shack. All I had was hanging on my back. Only you know how I loathe this place called Tobacco Road. But it's home. The only life I've ever known. Only you know how I loathe Tobacco Road.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and there they are, the Nashville Teens. They weren't from Nashville. They're from Surrey, England, and that was a remake, actually, of the John D. Loudermilk song, which, he wrote it, that's for sure, but didn't do much with it. But the Nashville Teens actually had a top 40 hit on it, but originally it sounded like this.
I was born in a lump. Mama died and daddy got drunk. Left me here to die or grow in the middle of Tobacco Road.
So there was, yes, and like I say, the Nashville Teens, who were big in Great Britain, but other than Tobacco Road, didn't do anything here. That's the deal on that. So, let's see. Stacy is in Algonquin. How's it going tonight, Stacy? You're still with us? We lost Stacy. Well, who could blame her? She waited quite a while, trooper that she was, and hopefully it is a good weekend for her and everybody else. And so, closing the show tonight, James on the South Side. How's James?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Can't complain. No one listens when I do. So, yeah, I'm okay.
Okay. Okay, I gotta admit, the some of the stories with respect to Harry and Meghan, or should I say Mary and Hagen, let's just say, how do you manage to go from stepping on one landmine to another?
Well, without elegance, that's for sure. So,
yeah, it's not a good look.
No, no. So, interesting. Of course, the big article is his palace nemesis received $180,000 from King Charles. You gave me that, which was somewhat interesting. So, yes.
Yeah, it seems like Harry's problem, he wanted peace and quiet. All these guys more controversial than the royal family ever stood up.
Yeah, he says he wanted peace and quiet, but he's married to a woman who wants anything but peace and quiet.
Okay, he wants drama 24/7.
Now, what I don't understand is how they keep moving out of this house. And it says they have officially moved out of Frogmore Cottage. I thought this was a couple of years ago. Didn't they leave for California?
I thought so, too.
So how's the deal?
Yeah.
So now they're officially off? Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't either. I'm almost certain that King Charles, you want to know something? They should be fairly happy that thank the lucky stars that Charles doesn't appear to be a vindictive sort.
Who knows? But I like the fact, like I say, so they're out of Frogmore Cottage, that the rest of us, and cottage is very misnomer for this, but nonetheless, the rest of us thought what they were out of for years. But I like the PR report. Safe to say that the Duke and Duchess have paid for their expenditure incurred by the sovereign grant in relation to the renovation of Frogmore Cottage, thus leaving the crown with a greatly enhanced asset. And apparently, King Charles asked the royal couple to remove their belongings from the property earlier this year. So I guess right after his best-selling memoir, Spare. And so that is the deal. I don't know. It's a 5-bedroom cottage on the grounds of Windsor Castle. And the Queen gave it to Harry and Meghan when they got married in 2018, and they were using it for occasional visits. And Meghan and Harry spent about $3 million to refurbish it. I can't imagine what they put in, but maybe a moat. But nonetheless, they no longer are there. I thought they left in 2020. So I guess, you know, when you put in $3 million in renovations, it takes you 3 years to move out. I don't know.
Yeah, but it just seems like, okay, it's kind of like some of the stories where you hear about unfortunate ends. You say, why? Okay. What was the point of all of this?
Oh, there's no point to all of this. I can't imagine that Harry's going to be in a good way, but he's the gift that keeps on giving for the tabloids. That's pretty much all I can say.
Yeah, and I think Harry. Here's the thing. Okay, that song they once said, "Silence is golden."
If violence is golden, that's hilarious.
That.
Yes, that's hilarious. All right, so it's interesting. They say, "What are the odds of Harry and Meghan splitting?" And the British odds maker, actually, it's interesting. They're saying 600, yes, but 1,250, no. So I guess that 600 is an implied probability of 14.3%. So the others think that no, they're not splitting, at least not anytime soon.
Okay, although I think if you believe, I think his butler wants to be there for the children. He's basically hooked his hooked himself to this this, and it's kind of like. Kind of like riding a rodeo. Unfortunately, I'm like, do you really want to get on the same horse that many times?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, what else is he going to do? You know? As usual, a ton of truly wonderful, wonderful story. And I guess we don't have the full deal on Madonna. I know you were one of the first to give me the Madonna news, but we're not 100% sure what all happened there.
Yeah, and hopefully she gets better.
On that note, that ends the week. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, you take care.
Okay.
Okay, to fuck from hazy Chicago.
Yes, indeed. All right. So we'll reconvene live on Monday night for Monday Night Trivia. Tomorrow it's a replay of Monday Night Trivia. And no stragglers. So we start afresh on Monday. So for the live shows, until then, that's a wrap. But again, tomorrow night, if you miss Monday night, you'll get to hear it in all its glory and splendor. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air. We thank John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. We'll do it all again soon. Until then, I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.